Welcome to the Edge Conservation Podcast, where we bring you the latest in innovation, insight, and effort on the front lines of wildlife conservation in Africa and around the world. I'm your host, Kira Dorian. Today, we are taking you to Los Angeles to speak with Matt Shapira. He's a filmmaker, producer, and artist who goes by the name Roaming Elephant. Matt, thank you for being with us today.
Hey, thanks, Kira, for having me. Glad to be here.
So I just want to start by asking you to tell me a little bit about what you do and how you got here, because you have a really diverse resume and an interesting journey. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about what led you to this place where you wanted to use art to protect wildlife?
I kind of fell into it through a bunch of wonderful people that I met as you go through your journey in life. I grew up in the industry, industry being LA, Hollywood. I was fortunate to meet some amazing people as a child who really were shapeshifters in both entertainment and film and music. As I started working with my father, I started connecting with some amazing artists. And a lot of the artists that by nature I would connect with were just incredibly compassionate people. The level of success they had, to me, was no coincidence. It was naturally because they knew how to build their resumes with amazing people around them. And of course, one of the things that always drew me to those particular people were they were very compassionate. They were supportive. And as I got closer with them and as I got a bit older, I realized the common denominator was a love for humanity and an interest in making things around them more beautiful. That kind of gravitated towards animals, different types of dog rescues and cat rescues. And as that kind of evolved and I got a little older, the margins started narrowed and I started realizing that there has to be a purpose to one's life more than just making a living, more than just having a family. You want to kind of help. You want to make a difference. Or at least those are the people that I felt inspired me. And naturally, as a result, I started learning different crafts beyond the craft that my dad taught me, which was talent agenting. I started using a camera. I realized at that point I wanted to tell stories with film, and so I decided to learn how to edit. Once I started to learn how to edit, I realized that there was no coincidence that this was happening. It was about telling a story on a larger platform. And then from that, I started aligning with some amazing leaders, some very heavily successful, I wouldn't say gurus, but if you go into the spiritual realm, they'd be considered gurus. And the common denominator was everyone walked away feeling inspired and making a difference in a world where it's very easy to be apathetic. And that was the beginning of a transition for me that kind of made my life purpose more defined. Making a movie is great. Making a second movie is great. Making a painting is great. Selling a movie, selling a painting. These are great achievements. But when you lay your head on your pillow at night, I think when you realize you're making a difference and a real legitimate difference and you're affecting people on a wide scale, it could be a child in a school in Studio City or a child in Lusaka or in Thailand. When you know you're making that kind of a broad stroke difference, you fight the temptation to be tired and you keep going. And I think that's where certain people throughout the globe whom I've met have really made a difference and inspired me to keep trying to make a difference.
I love that. So some of our listeners who maybe haven't heard of the work you're doing don't know that you make these just incredible murals of elephants, and they're in these bright, beautiful colors. I cannot even imagine what they look like in person because they were breathtaking on a computer screen. So for our listeners that haven't heard of you, they need to go and check these out. But I would love for you to just help them and me understand what the link is then between art as a way of approaching conservation. Like, what does art offer that maybe fundraising just can't? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And to add to what you're saying, I have painted about 90 murals in about 2.5 years. And during that time, my first mural was in a coffee shop next to where I live. I thought nothing of it. I was given the opportunity from a storefront owner, and as I was painting it, people started honking at me. People started stopping and talking to me, and immediately I was very intimidated by the fact that not only was I not painting in the comforts of my own home, but I was painting as a performer in front of many people who were now open to an opinion. And therefore, I had to work through some of my own demons to question whether or not I was justified in making this public appearance. And furthermore, I had to kind of work through my own demons to not second guess myself, because creativity is, as I see it, a flow state, like any other kind of performance or yoga. It's a vinyasa. It's a flow. And when you're in that flow, you're channeling something that's sometimes greater than you. And I think that's where artists, athletes, and many types of really creative people tend to channel something that they don't really know where it comes from. So from that being the foundation of my answer, I got into doing elephants because elephants came to me. I don't know exactly how to explain that in a sort of a logical manner. The reality is that during a meditation for me, an elephant just came up to me and looked at me and said, "Stop focusing on yourself. If you want to be happy, give, give, give." And so as a curious thought to that, I started painting the elephant. And as a result of that, much like the Hindu deity Ganesha, it became my new beginning. It became that thing that I was seeking in my meditation, which was to shift my perspective. So from that, I started painting on walls, hoping that through an emotional connection, people could relate. As an artist, you only hope that people like your work. And if nothing else, don't like your work. You know, you hope that they don't look at it and go, "What is that? What did you do to that wall? You ruined it." So to be appreciated, to be respected is words don't define the emotional connection to the gratitude when someone walks by and gasps and or congratulates you or acknowledges you. So the defining thing for me was trying to find the bridge between my own ability and getting the message that I wanted to share out. Elephants to me are a symbol, much like many other symbols of other people's sort of passion, spirit animal, things of that nature. Elephants to me represent love. Bottom line is they have a very heavy heart. They look emotional and they're symbolically and literally very family oriented. So I wanted to create an environment where in the city, on a wall larger than a canvas, you can walk by it, drive by it, and suddenly you think, well, you know, that's an elephant. That's really cool. There's something beautiful about an elephant. No one can say otherwise. So to specifically answer your question, art through the beginning of time, all the way through, you know, the Greeks, the Romans before that, has been a way to communicate history. And history, oftentimes defined by the person telling that story, shapes the modern mind. And we, throughout time, have always studied that so we can learn from our history and continue to grow our present and our future. I studied art history as a major in college, and I was so obsessed with art history because of the fact that I would learn about the Romans, the French, the Dutch. I lent my interest mostly to the post-impressionists because I was so shocked that they were offending the French during a time where the French were very stuck on a certain period of art that had to be perfect. I'm an imperfect person, and I think we live in an imperfect world. So naturally, the Van Goghs, the Degas, the Delacroix, I'm sorry, the Toulouse-Lautrecs, these type of artists, just I wanted to study them. I wanted to understand them. The fact that they put their art in coffee shops and not in salons and galleries because they were rejected, I felt a kinship. I felt a total connection. And I also feel like that's so symbolic of a current model for most human beings today. We're trying to find our way. I spoke to a woman named Carol Buckley, who's very well regarded as an elephant conservationist in the world, teaching people, conservationists in different parts of the world, how to take care of elephants today. She and I were talking about, because I was given her number to call her to talk to her about doing a mural at her new location in Georgia. And she said, "Why do I need to have an artist come and paint on a wall?" And I said, "Well, that's a really good question. It's a conversation starter. It disarms people. When I painted at Studio City at the Carpenter School, I had 1,000 kids watch me paint. It was an activity that the principal put together with the faculty. 1,000 kids all went to their classroom and then painted or drew an elephant for me as a gift. Now, how many of those kids learned about an elephant that day and about the ideas of conservation for animals in general? How many of those kids' parents found out about their day? That's 1,000 kids in one afternoon. I did the same thing in Zambia in 3 different cities, parts of the Zambian culture. I worked with the rangers' children. I worked with the different kids who have nothing. I worked with the principals, where all they have is cinder blocks as walls. And as I painted a mural, most of those kids in Zambia, not far from where the elephants roam free and are being poached regularly, had never seen an elephant. I was able to explain to those kids that I had to fly 22 hours to go and see an elephant that they have in their back door or backyard. And that if not for their opportunity to make a conscious ethical decision as they get older, that we might not have that option for people like me. I get stopped at restaurants every day in my area, not necessarily because they recognize me, but because I'll be sitting there drawing on a napkin because I am a weirdo artist who always likes to be creating. And so while I'm waiting for my meal, I'll just draw on an elephant. I mean, on a napkin, an elephant. And I'll have a waitress start to cry, saying that that piece is really pretty. And I'm, of course, confused because I don't realize, I don't know the impact. I'm just having a draw. And then she asked me if I know about an artist where she pulls up a phone, her phone, and shows me a picture. And then I say, yeah, that's my painting. She goes, what? I'm meeting you right now. And I'm like, yeah, that's so crazy that you have my painting. She goes, you're my favorite artist. And then she starts to cry, and then she sits down, and then her manager has to come over and say, hey, you got to go back to work. And I laugh, and I give her the napkin because I'm like, well, might as well. I mean, she obviously loves the piece. And then she starts to cry and thank me and tell everyone. I laughed. I called my mom. And I said, Mom, I had the weirdest situation happen. I don't really understand it. She goes, well, it's not you, Matt. It's your art. And it's the fact that people relate to what your brushstroke looks like or the kinetic energy that comes off of it. And again, I don't say that with a sense of entitlement. I say that with confusion and gratitude. I've always been a huge fan of Vincent van Gogh. He's always been kind of the color palette and the heavy brushstroke that measures to my emotional metronome. And I've always used that as my palette, so to speak. When people reach out to me and they feel that same connection they have to me that I have to him, I'm just humbled. And I know that my purpose is not to be entitled or feel a sense of arrogance. It's to spread this concept. And art, absolutely, number one above all, is the easiest, fastest way to disarm people, take their mask off, and let them speak. And I have spoken to all people in all walks of life, whether it's an Indian man who was driving my car 2 weeks ago, driving the car for me to go from Wildlife SOS to the Agra train station, and to see him look at my art. And we didn't speak a single language. We don't speak at all to each other. And then he looks at my art and starts to cry. To me, that's art right there. That's the moment where I met him in the middle without language. And that's what art does. It connects people on a visceral childlike way. You know, it's hard to even put it into words, really.
Yeah. So it sounds like the response to your work is very similar, whether it's in LA or a village in Zambia. Are there any differences between, you know, how your work is received here versus there? Or does it feel like the art really does unify us globally?
Kira, that's such a brilliant question. I didn't know the answer to that when I first set out to paint. I was really nervous about how I'd be received. I mean, I was in London not but 3 weeks ago at an event at the Dorchester, which is a very prestigious hotel, and I was painting live. My piece auctioned, it sold at that event for $15,000. I mean, knowing that the entire bulk of all of every dollar that raised money is all going to helicopters and rangers in Zambia, all of that, knowing that, and I sat there opposite and among one of my favorite actresses in the world, Judi Dench, who acknowledged my work and who is one of the masters of the world of cinema.
Absolutely.
To sit there and to see people like her. I mean, I sat a year ago in LA opposite. The point, yes, the answer is that I'm always blown away by the fact that there is a common denominator, and that is color and emotion is so much more connective than words. You know, I mean, like I said, music, poetry, there's so many mediums that we can create from. I've seen hundreds, if not thousands, of artists and all of their work. You know, some I connect to, some I don't. Universally speaking, I think what I paint is honestly just an emotion of, I'm channeling an elephant. I think I'm doing that. I don't think it's me painting it. I think it's an elephant. And I sound almost silly saying it, but I'm not a good artist. I'm just painting an elephant. People relate to the elephant. And then it opens up a platform to not only raise funding, but also bring awareness. And my art connects universally because people like, how do I say this? People don't like, people connect to the eyes of an elephant. There is no other way to put it. I consider myself more a messenger than an artist. I'm just fortunate enough to be the one holding the brush for now.
So I'm curious what you feel like you've learned about elephants that you can only learn by painting them. Like, what does art help us or you to see that maybe you wouldn't see otherwise?
You know, that's so great. When you look through the lens, like as a filmmaker, when you look through the lens at someone, you see a vulnerability that you don't see without the lens. There's something really magnetic about a performer who can really turn it on. When you take the lens and you rotate your creativity to a brush, and then you start with, for example, I always tell with kids, for example, because when I was a kid, I wanted to be more creative, but I was more of an athlete. And I always looked at creativity as like maybe a way to be too vulnerable, and I didn't want to share who I was. Maybe it was too sensitive. So I always tell children there are no mistakes. Creativity, art is a voice that's subconscious, that's deeper rooted in something you're trying to figure out that maybe you never will, but others will when they look at it for you. I always tell them there's no going back. You know, the hardest part of creativity is getting the brush to the wall. It's the 3 seconds it takes to put the paint on the brush and then put it towards the wall. When you look at that aspect and you break through that fear, I always draw with a Sharpie. I never use a pencil. I never sketch first. I start on the wall with a Sharpie or on a canvas with a Sharpie, because I believe every line, every single line will make sense at some point, whether I know it or not. And I say that boldly because the reality is when you look at the skin of an elephant, when you look at the eyes of an elephant, when you look at an elephant in general, the more you dissect the perspective of an angle, you know, the heavy leg, the skeletal structure, the skull. I mean, it is so full of texture, so detailed, that I could never do it justice with a fine art style. It'd have to be the way I do it. And to examine specifically my art and compare it to other artists, I think where my art's probably most like an elephant, if I were to go that direction, it's in the eyes. I can't help it. Every time I meet an elephant, and I've met an Indian elephant, a Southeast Asian elephant, an African elephant, their eyes, people go to elephants because they have fertility issues. They ask questions. Like, there are so many ways in which people believe culturally throughout the world elephants have answers. And to me, when I look at the elephant's eyes, I swear to you, I feel like I speak the elephant language with them. I hear what they're saying. They're basically literally telling people to give love. And I think a lot of times people will, maybe on the surface, attach ideas of sadness, because oftentimes it looks like they're sad. I think there's compassion. And if you study Buddhism or if you study spirituality, there's a lot of heaviness. There's a lot of sadness in that process. And I think, you know, to answer your question, when you start to dissect the creative process and you start to really draw an elephant and you start to recognize like which leg is the heavier leg, where the body weight shifts, which ears are Indian versus African, what elephants have hair, which elephants don't, it really becomes this thing where you, you know, I would say I know a lot more than elephants. I know a lot more about elephants than I probably should. But I'm very grateful. And the thing is most of it's come from my imagination. And I don't think that's a coincidence. And I think, you know, again, Carol Buckley, after my long conversation with her, she said this. I said, you know, I don't know why I started loving elephants out of the blue. It just happened. And she said to me this. She said, no, Matt, that's, you don't find elephants. They find you. And I think that there's a lot of people in the organization, we're speaking about the different organizations I've met, that they would probably say similarly, that just one day they looked into the eye of an elephant and their entire life shifted.
Wow. I mean, I was really struck when I was watching videos of you paint that exactly what you said. It's almost like you're not thinking, you're just drawing these strokes so confidently, like it's all going to come together and make sense. And it's impressive to watch because they're, you know, it's like a broad permanent stroke that you're making. And it does really then come together. It's sort of like you're being led to do it.
I feel like we're in an age where people are becoming more spiritual than ever. And I say spiritually, you know, using that term very loosely. I think they're becoming more consciously aware of what makes them happy individually. And I think as we look at taking risks, I think we have to take risks as human beings. I mean, my dad is my mentor and my best friend, and he always explained to me that, you know, you have to find a way to stand out. You know, you have to find a way to do what you got to do, and do it boldly. And I think that when I was, you know, a kid, I met some great mentors, you know, some really amazing mentors, and they made bold strokes, whatever they were doing. And I look at a lot of my pieces, and, you know, what is most humbling about your comment right there is that I think naturally we as human beings will look at something that we've done or who we are, and we look at the negatives. And I think oftentimes people don't see those negatives, they see the positives. And I don't mean to sound a little cheesy, but there's a mantra that I live by. And it's the moment your perception shifts from fear to love is a miracle. Or rather, a miracle is the moment your perception shifts from fear to love. And I think fear is the idea that I'm going to screw up a wall or I'm going to screw up a painting. When I transition that into, I'm just going to do what it is that I do and hope that for the best, it's going to be what it is. And I think that if I can translate that message into a broader stroke like film and combine a line, as I have tried to do with different organizations on different countries or in different countries, I think we can make a difference. To the degree of difference, well, I think that's going to be difficult to assess. You know, there's a constant theme amongst conservationists that I've met. There's hundreds, if not thousands, of elephants, different types of animals that every day you meet and you're like, I wish I could make a difference for them. And there's only so many you could really, you know, really take care of. You know, in India, there was 23 elephants at the sanctuary I was at. In Thailand, there was about 78. In Africa, there were about 19 calves. Each of them there because of something that really awful, you know, something awful that happened to them. And there's so many more that we have to take care of. And I think the only way that we're going to do that is by recognizing that, you know, we have to find methods to guide people into an awareness that's greater than their own self-perspective. Mm-hmm. And I think that starts and ends with love.
So you mentioned your filmmaking. Is that a plan to bring this work into film as well?
Yes. I have some friends that have asked me, some influential friends who have some very high-profile projects that are elephant conservation and poaching driven storylines in Africa, some in India. I've always felt like to make a difference, you have to reach the greater audience, the bigger audience, and then you have to connect with an audience. You know, to me as a filmmaker, I'm inspired by an existential storyline. I'm inspired by the idea of presenting questions, not answers. I think answers should be developed from one's own perspective. You know, the more I can present a question, and I think in my art, specifically in my paintings, I don't create fine art. I create very, very impressionistic, post-impressionistic style art. It's to present questions. It's to make you look at the piece and question it as opposed to have an answer for it. That captivates, or at least that's my hope. And that's the art that always inspired me. I think we have, as a filmmaker, I've always been inspired by artists, filmmakers who've created scenarios where you walk away more perplexed than fulfilled. I think that oftentimes leaves people sometimes, you know, torn 50% down the middle, like the movie, some don't. You know, you look at like a Terrence Malick or a Christopher Nolan, who's very esoteric in their nature. I intend and I would expect in the very near future to be involved with, either as a director or as a producer or both, an elephant conservation movie. I've been presented with a few options. Much like when I sell my paintings, I won't just sell my painting to anyone. I have to know the person. I have to get to know the person. I have to acknowledge that they're the kind of person that gets to have one of my pieces, not because I'm a bad person, but simply because I want it to be acknowledged in a sense where it's in the right house. I'd rather have kids have it, where a kid can grow up looking at an elephant, where rather than in a collector's house where it's sitting in a warehouse. You know, if I'm going to work with filmmakers and make an elephant conservation movie, I want the conservation teams behind me, and I want to support them. I want to raise money for them. I want to put percentages of the profits directly allocated towards these efforts. I think it would be insincere, and I don't think I'm meant to be an artist recognized for being a great artist. I think I'm meant to be an artist to help elephants. And I think as a filmmaker, I think it's about helping all of those people who have changed their lives, who've dedicated their lives to taking care of elephants, who've literally changed from living in a suburb somewhere to living in Thailand or living off the, you know, in a farm off the, you know, in France, because that's what they've done. And I've been to those places and I've met those people and I've seen the struggles and the sacrifices they've made. They're the people I'm making the movie for. The elephants, that's why they're doing it. So yes, I've directed 3 movies in the last year. A comedy, a drama, a thriller. I've produced over 17 movies. I've got 4 movies coming out this year. I'm signed up to do 4 more movies in 2019. My goal would be to do something on a large scale that the world could appreciate the story. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people out there doing a great job. I mean, there's a lot of great voices out there. I think one of the things that would help is if all those voices somehow found a way to come together. I think that might be the greatest potential, is if we can do it that way. And that's what I'm hoping for. And that's what I'm aiming for.
I love that. And what about the specifically for the murals? What's next with that? Like, what's on the agenda for you?
Well, I got to recover. going to India is not just a culture shock. It's overwhelming, to say the least, because it's a different type of experience than one can even express. You know, going to Africa and traveling to these different places. I mean, 1 month I'm in the Amazon, trekking through a jungle. The next I'm in the bush with hippos peeing on my tent while I'm trying to sleep. The next I'm, you know, in India trying to figure out a way not to get Delhi belly, which is the curse of eating something that'll make you sick for a week. I think, you know, I've been offered to do a mural at a beautiful elephant, coffee shop called Black Elephant, which is in Silver Lake. They donate a lot of their profits to conservation. So I'm going to do that with them. I think the universe usually guides me. For me, I have to quiet the mind and just kind of allow, I'll paint a little bit and then something will pop up. I have to contemplate that. I don't know the answer. I think that what would be really spectacular would be where I can do a wall that's maybe 500 feet tall, or, you know, like a big skyscraper, you know, something that, because, you know, I think, like I said before, the bigger the story, the bigger the theatrical nature of something, the greater the impact. And I think that I'm totally afraid of heights. I'm petrified. But I ask myself, much like flying 22 hours each way, like, no one really loves getting on a plane for that long, 44 hours, but when you're a messenger of something, you just do it. I think I'm just prepared for whatever someone thinks would be the right approach for me to do something on behalf of conservation for elephants.
I love it. And so tell us and tell our listeners how they can find you. If they want to follow your work, if they want to be in touch about maybe having you come into a mural, tell us how that works and how they can find you.
Well, first off, thank you for allowing me to be a guest on your show. I go by the name Roaming Elephant on Instagram. I'm at roaming_elephant. I have 2 websites, one that is for my film, Roaming Elephant Productions. And then I have one for my art, which is Roaming Elephant Art. Those two share a common interest in that they explain the process of what I'm doing as a filmmaker and as a painter. There's information on the organizations that I work with on both those sites. There's behind-the-scenes videos of my filmmaking and my painting, depending on where I am in the world. In an interest of getting a hold of me, oftentimes I think people who will reach out to me will realize that we're all human beings, and I think we're always grateful when we have a connection to each other. I've come to learn through wonderful culture, different experiences in different parts of the world, whether it's a Bangladeshi dinner in London or, you know, in a police dinner in Nepal. Humans need community. We need each other to feel natural and ordinary and alive. I'm just trying to figure out a way to make a difference. If you think there's a mural that would help in your city or your school, I donate a lot of my time. I'm willing to do that. I'm also willing to speak in front of anyone or any group to encourage an education on conservation as well as creativity. you can email me at myname@gmail.com, which will probably be attached to this interview later. And I look forward to each and every one of you who reach out to me.
Awesome. Matt, thank you so much for being with us today and just sharing all about the work that you do and how you got there. And it's incredible. And for our listeners, please check out Matt's work. It's absolutely beautiful.
Thank you, Kira, for the opportunity. It was nice talking to you.
So as I like to do, I'm going to end today's episode with a quote. This is from Baba Diouam, who is a Senegalese poet. And he says, "In the end, we can serve only what we love." And as Matt talked about today, his work comes from love. Elephants represent love. And so I encourage you to check out his work because it is filled with love. Join us next week. And if you like the sound of my dulcet tones, you should know that I co-host another podcast called Raising Adults, Future Focused Parenting, where myself and another parent coach sit down to talk about parenthood. Our podcast is produced by Eric Johnson, Kira Dorian, and Edge. If you haven't already, make sure to follow Edge on Instagram and Facebook, and be sure to leave us that 5-star review. Ratings and reviews really are the key to a successful podcast. Thanks for listening.